chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going this evening for you. We've got Alex Jones calling out Trump. We've got, Glenn Beck interviewing Giuliani, and Giuliani says he has the proof from the Burisma and that Ukrainian scandal that's ongoing about the Bidens. So anyway, we're going to start this off. We've got Alex, that calls out President Trump, but also followed by a great interview that he had with Dr. Steve Pachinik. So here we go with Alex Jones.
I have a message here as we close out the year 2019 to President Trump. Everything you're doing is going to be for naught if you continue to allow the deep state to try to overthrow you illegally and illegitimately. It is treason against the American people. It's treason against the Bill of Rights, against the Constitution. But I'm going to tell you this, Mr. President. The persecution going on against individuals in government and in academia and in the corporate world and in media that do support you is incredible. I have articles right here, many couples arguing more about Trump than finances. It's breaking families up across the country. That is the level of the psychological warfare going on, targeting people through the media. Michael Moore is back in the news saying white people are inherently bad. This is literal KKK level garbage from the left. And if you won't take action against the illegal spying and against the attempt to overthrow your election and the open move by big tech to not send voting information to conservatives but to send them to Democrats, as Professor Robert Epstein documented, then you're asleep at the switch. All right. Over the Christmas break, the 2 days we took off, President Trump had a press conference, and he talked about Roger Stone because the question got raised to him. He said, oh, I haven't really thought about that, which means he's not ready to make a statement on it. Obviously, he has talked about it. But he went on to say what happened to Roger was obviously wrong. Yeah, to say the least, he was not convicted of being a Russian spy. He was convicted for lying to Congress on a tiny formality, and that's not ground I'm going to cover again. I know you all know that, but this speaks the whole issue. If Trump won't start indicting these people and these rogue government agencies, these bad cops, as he calls them, well, then what does it say if they're just left alone? It says it's open season on anybody that supports Trump. And so, okay, Sean Hannity's ready to lose his job. So is Tucker Carlson. Alex Jones has got him trying to put him in prison, speaking in third person, and suing the hell out of me and lying about my family and paying former employees to tell huge lies who I'm going to have to sue so that other people know they can't just lie about me. But that all takes money. So I'm going to get into this and Trump in a moment. And I love Trump. But his biggest failure is that he can't get the Justice Department to do their damn job. Illegally spying on a candidate, doing it once they're president, lying to Congress about it is illegal. And I've got CIA hearings and Defense Department hearings. It's not the military coming after me. It's all the Ivy Leaguers that have these intelligence clearances literally calling me an enemy agent and talking about how they're trying to shut me down. That means shut you down. And I'm pissed. I'm an American citizen being run over by a bunch of America-hating scum that openly say they hate this country. And then they sit there in Congress, and I'm not in those hearings getting to challenge them. These people should be damned to hell, though. I mean that. I'm not taking the Lord's name in vain there. I mean, these people are sick, but vengeance is God's. I'm just going to say this. We need action. And it's not for me being under attack. It's because these criminals are getting more bold, and they're intimidating a lot of other people and getting them to give up. We could win all these battles and lose the war because the president is an island unto himself, and no man is an island unto themselves. So I'm going to open the phones up today and talk about what Trump needs to do. Because you just heard Giuliani. All he needs is two people. He can indict all these folks. It's totally true. You could convict these people with your eyes shut. My God, they went all over TV and said, well, you know, they were investigating my son, so I said, if that guy's not fired by the time I leave in 6 hours, you're not going to get the $1 billion. And son of a bitch, they fired him. I had to sit here and put up with that crap from these criminals. Remember, I talked about the Council on Foreign Relations 25 years ago and how the British intelligence set it up and how it wants to get rid of America and get rid of the family and how it runs the narcotics and all this. People are like, that doesn't even exist. I remember Rush Limbaugh 25 years ago saying the CFR is made up. Not just that it doesn't run things, but that it's made up. In 2019, Rush Limbaugh attacks the CFR all the time because we trailblazed. We hit the barbed wire. This audience did. You did it. You did it. To get us where we are. And now I don't want accolades. I don't want awards. I just want to win what we've already won. I want to keep it. I want to take the country back. I want to not teach five-year-olds how to sit on the lap of convicted pedophiles and ride horsey. I want the wolves that are chasing the sheep to be dealt with. And I want more people to start acting like sheepdogs.
I think I put this up because Trump has been delaying on some of these actions that will only help him get reelected. This social network stuff can still be pulled out and used against him. So Alex is right on some of these issues. And we just got to persuade President Trump to start doing some of these things and become, go on the offense for a change. Next is, Alex Jones's interview with Dr. Steve Pachinik, and he has quite a colorful past. And he explains in his own words how he sees what's going on right now with the impeachment and Pelosi and many other things. Listen to this closely. Here we go, Dr. Steve Pachinik, Alex Jones.
And I want to say Merry Christmas to all of our audience and to Dr. Steve Pachinik. I'm not going to get into his whole bio, but he helped run the Camp David Accords. That's how long he's been around, helped found Delta Force, done a whole bunch of stuff since then. He's on record, overthrowing governments. He's talked about it on air before and gotten called into federal court over it. I mean, so he's got to be careful about the type of stuff he gets to here on air. But you talk about a source. There's all these Q fantasies and stuff. I mean, this is a real guy that's been around a long time and knows a lot of stuff. This is a real deal here. And then that's why he's showing his face. Didn't do that, until the last few years. That's how serious the time is. So, Doc, tell us where we are right now from your perspective, how the coup against Trump's going, curveballs we should expect, and then what Epstein really is.
Ah, this is great. Thank you for coming on, and Merry Christmas to everybody and Happy Hanukkah. The reality of the coup is that when it fails quite prominently. And what is a coup? Let me explain to the audience several coups. I was involved in what you call a soft coup. That means we don't use military. We basically transfer power very quickly. It occurred during the Nixon administration, where Nixon gave the rights over to Ford. And in fact, the man who was important in that was Kissinger, because he maintained the stability of the country. I was involved in other coups that were hard coups, which was in Italy, which means we use force or force had been used, or in Cambodia, where I had to disarm the Khmer Rouge. And ironically, now I can say because an Israeli operative died, I was involved in the coup, which Israelis did not know, the assassination of Rabin. This is the first ever heard of because I had interviewed Rabin and I found him to be exceedingly depressed. I related to one of Bibi's right-hand man, and in turn, Rabin was assassinated, not for the Oslo Agreement, but because he was so depressed he could not function. Israel be stunned on that statement. The other coups have to do with the Bush senior administration and the Bush junior administration, where we transferred power. So what happens in a coup? In a coup, what happens, power is transferred very quickly, and it's done quietly. What happened in this case was that Brennan and Clapper and Comey, that was the CIA and the FBI, got together from the very beginning under the auspices of Obama and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton administration, to say, we don't want Trump. It was as simple as that. They then instituted what they called a hard and soft coup because they literally wanted to get rid of him. In turn, the FBI, which is a highly compromised institution, I mean highly, from the very beginning when it was created by a homosexual who, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, they love to talk about him, but he was a cross-dresser. He was a nasty man. It wasn't the issue of cross-dressing. It was the issue that he had information on every one of our presidents and basically used it. That's when Nixon got rid of him. And from that point on, I was not a fan of the FBI. It wasn't only a factor that they were deprecated in terms of their importance, but they were ineffective. When I had to do the Hanafi Muslim, when I had to do other coups or other hostage, the FBI was just useless. And it's an organization which has to be stripped down or literally taken apart. Comey is a disaster. He was a failed individual, as was Brennan, who was a CIA and director of the CIA, but he came out of what we call the analyst group, not the DDO. He created a company. He failed at that. And he kind of, what I would say, worked his way up the CIA hierarchy, where he took care of a young African-American by the name of Obama, who was really a CIA operative, and his mother, Ann Dunham. So we're permeated with CIA, and it's not a conspiracy issue as much as it is. There are real problems. When you have somebody who comes totally out of the paradigm of the CIA or the intelligence network and out of the paradigm of a politician like Trump, forget what Trump accomplished. The point is, a man like Trump, who is a businessman, who doesn't really care about politics, who really cares about implementing outcomes. And he cares about building a ice skating rink, Walton Memorial, as he did for my kids. He built a 42nd Street, Fifth Avenue, Trump Towers, then the casinos.
He likes to execute tangible things.
Exactly. What he says in between is not as relevant as the end product. But we have never, never had a president of the United States who was that efficient and that much of a businessman. They like to say they were businessmen. The Bush seniors like to say they were in Zapata oil, but they weren't. They went down all the way from the WASP Anglo-Saxons northeast and went down to Texas to make believe they were oil diggers. And that's where Bush Jr. came out. He was an artifact. He wasn't
sure,
really
they were creating a Texas legend because nobody trusted the guys from Kennebunkport, Maine.
Now you got it. So you had that type of individual created by the agency, a product of the agency, and came out of the Northeast. Then we started having a power shift down to the South, as I told you, to Texas, down to North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida. New York was losing power. Illinois.
I want to keep you there. We got to go to break. If you're giving a big picture, and we'll get into Epstein, because you were calling the show like 15 years ago and say all this was going to happen, the EU is going to fall apart, and they're all going to fail. And be like, oh, that guy's. I even thought you were being too optimistic, but it's all happening now. So I want to get into what's coming next as well. But first, hit Epstein. We'll be right back. What is the United States of America? Well, we're told its existence is bad now with the Democratic Party and others. No borders, no walls, no USA at all. Well, then what will we be? What is our culture? Hollywood, the communist Chinese, the out-of-control John Paul Junkers of Europe? And their sickening past? I mean, we're being told to give up our identity because it's bad. And didn't become what? The truth is, our real identity challenges tyranny. And so they want us to hate ourselves, but there's a rebirth of nationalism, of patriotism. Globalism is in crisis everywhere. But they're going to strike back. But first, we've got to set the table with the massive migration away from the blue cities, their death throes they're in right now, and what comes out of that, and then what we see happening in Israel, happening in Europe, happening here, and why they're so scared of Epstein. Who was Epstein really? What was he really doing? What was the Zorro Ranch? What was the eugenics? What was the breeding program? Well, we know pet projects of some of these globalists and their eugenics. I knew that before I knew about Epstein and the sex stuff. I'd seen him involved with some of these globalists in bizarre behavior. So, Dr. Pachinik, we'd run into break. You had predicted here, been on air 18 years with us, but you predicted, I remember 15 years ago, you'd say, oh, the Northeast and, you know, the blue cities on the West, it's all going to collapse. It's all going to move there. And there's going to be the EU is going to fall. They're finished. And then the Chi-Coms are going to, we're going to have a big war with them, economic, maybe physical, in the next 20 years. They're going to lose. And I mean, that's all moving that direction. So please continue.
Here's what happens. Epstein is an example of what happened in an institution. We're a republic, and Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have had a real hard problem, and I had to instruct her through my videos that this is a republic. We are not a democracy. That means we're representational government. We have constantly had all kinds of factors within our republic that we've had to fight against. And that's correct, Alex. The reason we're very strong is that we're not really a soft nation. We're a very ruthless, tough, no-nonsense nation. Part of that is the fact that within our own governments, as a republic, we have to clean out those elements which are destructive to the people. For example, Epstein or the CIA, as I said. For a long time, I have been against the CIA only because they have served the purpose in the 1940s and 50s. And I will get to the history because it relates to Epstein. The CIA had to have a very close collaboration with another organization called the Mossad. Why the Mossad? Because the CIA was created by Philby, the Cambridge Five. Within the Cambridge Five, they were all homosexuals who had been at the University of Cambridge in England. One day, a gentleman by the name of Moshe Dayan came in and walked with James Jesus Angleton, who was head of our counterintelligence, and he said, excuse me, but do you understand that your whole CIA has been infiltrated and created by communists? As a result of that, the Mossad helped the CIA clean out all of the Cambridge Five, and then came in the WASP, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, the Frank Wisners who created Mockingbird, the others who came in and decided that we had to infiltrate the press, we had to control the media, and basically we had all the writers, journalists on the CIA payroll. As a result of that, the next movement was to have what we call doubling behavior. That is to compromise major politicians here and overseas and Prince Andrew and use a man like Epstein, who was a little Jewish man of no significance from Brooklyn. The same thing we had with Dershowitz. These were all Brooklyn Jews who thought they were smarter than they were. They had no real education. Epstein had never gone to MIT, never gone to Harvard. But what happened was the Mossad really used him in conjunction with the CIA. That's why he has never been touched. And basically what he did, and this is what I was against for 40 years, and I warned the CIA, and I warned the Mossad, and I had arrested one of their operatives for 2 years after 9/11, that if you continue to infiltrate and destroy our republic, I will go after the Israeli operatives. And here is where the problem became. Epstein never died. He was never in prison. None of that is real. Unfortunately, Barr, who was our attorney general, it was his father that gave Epstein the job at the Dalton School, which was an all-girls school, and he taught mathematics. The rest is up to conjecture, but it's not, because I've been involved with the CIA and knew that they were highly compromised because of the Mossad. And as a result of that, the Israeli Mossad has gotten used Epstein to compromise MIT professors, George Church, Minsky, even the president of MIT, Raphael Rafe, whom I said to him repeatedly, how can you still remain as president of MIT when you were compromised and you would have the
problem? Well, let's expand on that. I mean, you've got Epstein advertising that he's got these advanced, you know, research programs, getting Bill and Melinda Gates, getting Warren Buffett, getting Oprah Winfrey, getting Ted Turner at these secret institute meetings that came out in the news 15 years ago. That's how I knew about Epstein. And the fact that, and then Zorro Ranch and these breeding programs. I mean, there's a lot of stuff this guy was on top of, a lot of weirdness.
Well, the weirdness was part of it was created. He himself was weird. But the key element here to understand in our business of compromising people or doubling them up is that you never, never use children underage. When you double up an operative and you use a honey trap, which is usually a woman for a man or a man for a homosexual, you do not use underage children. And this is where the CIA has to be held accountable and the Mossad. But this is where Gina Haspel has to be accountable and all the operatives that have been involved. They're still around. They know exactly who they are. But because we do not have an effective attorney general, and I'm sorry, William Barr is not an effective attorney general. I find him highly compromised. I find the Department of Justice highly compromised. So they can go all play around and make believe that they're indicting the FBI or Comey. But the reality is, once you're implicated in a problem, you can't get out of it. When Barr said, oh, my God, Epstein committed suicide in the cell by himself, give me a break, will you? There's no such thing as committing suicide in a cell by yourself. And then in turn, the story even got more absurd. That's why you become important as the alternative media, but it's the real media. So where did Epstein go? Usually we take these operatives and we send them off to Paraguay or wherever else. But he will never be held accountable, nor will the CIA, nor will the Mossad. And that's where people like myself come in and say, uh-uh. These days are finished. You can't get into this kind of stuff anymore. And then they'll say, oh, well, he's a Trumpite or he believes in conspiracies. And that's why my book couldn't be published. I have the William Morris Agency. They're nice people.
We're going to get to that next hour. I want to spend a lot of time on your book, but let's just go back. It is true that the body they took out on the stretcher has a, and this was mainline photos, AP, you name it, is not the same ear. The ear doesn't even look halfway the same. Put that back on screen, please, guys. That's from the photo the Daily Mail everybody ran. That is a real photo, and it's not even the same ear. Looks nothing like it.
Absurd. I mean, for a man, I mean, think of it for a minute. You know the dynamics of suicide and other people. You can't commit suicide by yourself in a cell. I've run the criminally insane wards in St. Elizabeth.
Not with the paper sheets.
No, of course not. And for William Barr to come up and to pronounce these nonsense and then say there was a storm of circumstances, this compromises Trump. So I would fire Barr. And I've said all along where I find Trump is weak is he's not tough enough. I do not think he has people within the White House.
Well, you said that about all of them 2.5 years ago. So stay there. This is what I want to get into because you mentioned it. I want to finish up with the impeachment coup, what you think Trump needs to do. And then I want to get into your book because people aren't supposed to hear this. The big publishers that have published your other stuff, they wouldn't even touch it. And this is just all part of the censorship and control. Dr. Steve Pachinik is our guest. StevePachinik.com is his website. We'll put a link to that up on Infowars.com. Some of the other issues he's going to cover. Christianity Today, that's blown up in their face. Facebook fascism. Mike Rogers, former NSA chief, he's got comments on that. John Durham and that investigation. Pelosi's downfall. Corruption of Hollywood, Mockingbird Media, and how no one would publish Dr. Pachinik's book. And here is a copy of the new book. You find it at StevePachinik.com, American Warrior in Crisis, Tales of a Political Psychiatrist.
To our listening audience, some of this information I know is pretty sophisticated and maybe off the edge to some of our listeners. You've got to have a background to absorb and to be open-minded enough to comprehend sometimes what is actually going on out there. It's not like you've been taught in the colleges and universities. They teach you a little Bach diagram thing that isn't so out here in the real world. I mean, so what's happening in the real world is very, very, very wicked and very evil, and it's far beyond what most people really want to even hear about. That's why it's hard to listen to some of this hard-hitting news and exposés that's going on in the alternative news is what we consider ourselves to be. Glenn Beck interviewed Rudy Giuliani recently in about a week ago. He had additional information about the Ukrainian, crisis and also the scandals concerning the Bidens. So here's what he had to say just recently.
The reason I'm in a lot of trouble in Ukraine is I uncovered an 8-year-long money laundering system that started probably in 2012 with $7.5 billion being laundered by Yanukovych, the president at the time, pro-Russian president at the time. He laundered it through American institutions, interestingly controlled by Democrats, controlled by one person who just came out of the Obama administration. Lots of connections to Democrats. $7.5 billion is getting laundered through these two particular banks. 9.5% interest on that to all the people participating every year. Wow. We know the Ukrainian people who participate in it. We know because I'm very close to the Ukrainian authorities. The U.S. has refused to be involved in that investigation. The U.S. Justice Department, FBI, refuses to be involved. I have letters here from prosecutors to the Justice Department begging them to get involved in that. They went to the Southern District with these allegations against Biden 2 months before me. Mm-hmm. The Southern District turned them away.
I know.
We could already have had this we could have already had this whole thing investigated.
They keep saying, the Southern District said this and Congress said this, that when they looked at these documents, it was nothing but a conspiracy theory. It's not.
No.
If you come out and tell me how these documents are false,
right?
But that's an awful lot of documents that are false.
Well, then you have to have an investigation,
right?
You know, like they say, right. The charges against Biden have been debunked,
right?
Show me the report,
right? I'd love to see it.
I want to show you one other document that I think probably gets the President of the United States angrier than anything else, and you'll see why in a minute. This is an accounting report going back to 2017. This is during the Obama administration. The Ukrainians located $5.3 billion in foreign aid that was being misspent. About 80% of that is our money. That's what he keeps saying about he was worried about how Ukraine spends money. Here's the proof. Not, you know, Adam Schiff lies. Here's the proof. Now, the Ukrainians started to investigate this. Two people from our embassy went to see them and told them, don't investigate it. We don't care. We don't care about the $5.3 billion of our taxpayers' money. And you say, well, why would they do that? And then there was even a lot more pressure. Why would they do that? Because what this shows is that our embassy was giving this money not to the government. They were giving it to NGOs. You know who the biggest NGO owner is?
Yeah, George Soros.
Oh, my God. Anti-Semitic. We're anti-Semitic now.
I know.
We said the word George Soros. I'll be damned if you're going to call me anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Semitic. I prosecuted Italian criminals. I prosecuted Jewish criminals. I prosecuted every kind of criminal imaginable. I even prosecuted some Martian criminals, I think.
Rudy.
This money is going to Democratic NGOs.
I know.
And they waste half of it. The government gets half of it. And here's what the decent Ukrainians told me. And there are a lot of decent Ukrainians. Said, you guys, particularly under Obama, where corruption got much worse, they will all testify. You guys come here like Biden, and you lecture us on corruption. And then our people laugh at you because he and his son are two of the most corrupt people in the country. They all knew he was a joke.
Okay, I know you have to go, and I'm up against the time. Will you do me...
There are many more of these.
Will you do this? Can you convince me that this will come out? That these people will be judged and not in some
hatred. I'm going to try until I die, so they better kill me. I mean, there's no way they shouldn't be prosecuted. This should be in a federal court. I know federal courts. I know federal courts better than anybody. I will be completely immodest and say I was the most successful U.S. attorney in the last 50 years. These are out-and-out crimes. If anybody's afraid of prosecuting them, you make me the special prosecutor with two people and not $35 million. I'll prosecute every single one of them myself.
That's really Giuliani, and he's a stand-up guy. He really is. And he said give him a couple of prosecutors. He'll prosecute him himself. And I believe the man. But coming up next is Greg Jared interview with Lewandowski. And Lewandowski has some additional information about a possible Hunter Biden ongoing investigations. So here we go with Greg Jared and Lewandowski.
A private investigation firm alleging in a new court filing that Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, is actually the subject of multiple criminal investigations. The firm claiming that Hunter is involved in investigations relating to, quote, fraud, money laundering, and a counterfeiting scheme. The documents coming to light during Biden's ongoing case with an Arkansas woman who allegedly had his child. It's a paternity case. Joining me now, former 2016 Trump campaign manager, senior advisor to the 2020 Trump campaign, Corey Lewandowski. Corey, happy holidays. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Greg.
To what extent are, you know, Hunter Biden's escapades and, you know, suspicions of corrupt acts going to really damage Joe Biden's chances of being elected president?
Well, clearly, Hunter has been the focal point of the Biden campaign now. And what's really interesting, though, is the pass that Joe Biden has gotten for Hunter's activities. You know, no one wants to talk about Burisma. We don't really know how much money Hunter has made from his contracts overseas. He's now the subject of an ongoing lawsuit through the paternity problem that he has down south. And we know that he has to do a deposition. And this woman is asking how much money he's made over the last 7 years, which are traced back to the period of time when his father was the vice president of the United States. The really interesting part here is that the mainstream media, by and large, is ignoring this entire story. And when Joe Biden's asked about it, he says, hey, it's a family matter, and that's the end. Can you imagine for 1 second if Donald Trump or Mike Pence had the same issue potentially transpiring, and their answer was, it's a family matter? It would be merciless attacks on them. But, hey, it's different sets of rules for Joe Biden and the Democrats.
You know, Joe Biden has had to wrestle with his son's questionable activities for years. And now there's a new videotape that's emerged of NBC's Tom Brokaw calling out potential corruption by Hunter Biden and confronting Joe Biden about it. This dates all the way back to 2008. So this is nothing new to anybody who's actually paying attention, is it?
It's not new, but remember what Joe Biden said when this was brought to his attention when he was the vice president of the United States. He said, my office doesn't have time for this right now. So he literally just poo-pooed this idea. They knew about it. We've seen the pictures now of Hunter and Joe golfing with their business partners. Clearly, something probably illicit took place overseas. It'd be very interesting to know how much money Hunter Biden made from his direct relationship with his father serving as the vice president of the United States. It is a direct correlation. Look, what we know is Donald Trump made a phone call and the House Democrats decided to impeach him over a phone call and a transcript, which everyone read and agreed there was nothing wrong with and the call was perfect. Joe Biden actually went on television and bragged about the fact that if something didn't transpire, they were going to hold $1 billion. And hey, that's okay because it's Uncle Joe. It's Crazy Joe. It's whatever you want to call him, but it's right. A different set of rules. Joe Biden's worst days are still in front of him. I'm not convinced he's going to be the Democratic nominee. His son is an albatross around his neck right now. And it's really too bad because you want to keep your family separate when you're in public life. But Hunter has clearly profiteered so much from his father's job as the vice president that the American people have a right to know exactly how much money he's made.
I want to ask you about the Inspector General's report. If you read it all the way to the end, it appears that there were 51 inaccurate statements, errors, omissions, deceptions, false representations, and outright lies, not to mention the doctoring of some critical evidence by an FBI lawyer. But it appears that the FISA court's presiding judge, Rosemary Collyer, only cares about that particular lawyer. Does that suggest to you that the FISA court, you know, isn't taking this seriously and maybe trying to protect people at the top of the FBI, formerly like James Comey?
Well, James Comey and Andy McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, we clearly know that they had a vendetta and an agenda to stop Donald Trump from getting elected and then have him removed once he was elected. The fact that they lied on their FISA application, which we now know, and Greg, you remember this. The first FISA application that the FBI submitted to the court was actually denied because it was so poorly done. Then they sole-sourced stories, came back with the second application, and that FISA judge accepted it. We would call on John Roberts specifically to review the FISA review process and hold people accountable. That is a lawful document when you sign that FISA application that says it is honest to the best of your knowledge. We have no opportunity in a FISA application to hear the other side, the defense side. And look what that FISA court did to people like Carter Page, a man who was never charged with a crime, but an American who's being spied on simply because he wanted to see Donald Trump win an election. We're better than that, and people should be held accountable for that.
Well, Collyer's reaction to this is outrageous. It's an abdication of judicial duty. Her response needs to be, oh, kumbaya, let us know how you're going to fix the problems. Instead of holding people in contempt during a show cause hearing, people like Comey, McCabe, even Rod Rosenstein, all of whom signed off on these applications with faulty evidence. It's truly despicable conduct. And on the part of the FISA court in particular. Corey Lewandowski, thanks for being with us.
If you notice right at the end, Greg Jarrett brought up some problems with the FISA court. That's what's beginning to be talked about in some of these interviews with some of these journalists and reporters, is that did the FISA court rubber stamp? We know that they have a history of rubber stamping many of the applications presented to them. So in this particular case, was the FISA court out to work and work against President Trump's interest, and to were they involved in this coup that is ongoing? That is what is beginning to be questioned by what I hear through interviews and so forth. Next, Tammy Bruce, sitting in for Sean Hannity, interviews Greg Jarrett and Sarah Carter concerning this problem with Pelosi holding back these articles. And also, you know, she's trying to interfere with the rules of the Senate, so it's up to the senators to decide how to best to handle this. So, you know, by the way, Nancy Pelosi is from Baltimore. And we need to dig down into her past. It's a very interesting past.
Joining us now with more is Fox News contributor Sarah Carter and the author of Witch Hunt, Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett. Thank you both for joining me tonight. I know we're going to get right down to the heart of what all of this is. What we just listened to is just absolutely awful. Greg, let me start with you, because we see a number of headlines here. After all of this stuff with the impeachment, about how it was urgent and it kept the Republicans from being able to do certain things because the time was short, because you had this bad, horrible man in the White House who had to be stopped. Suddenly now it's like, oh, you know, we got all the time in the world. Media is arguing about how this is a genius strategy. What is your take on it?
Well, first of all, nobody takes Richard Painter seriously, which is why he's on MSNBC and CNN. This is the guy who sued Trump 3 days after he took office. So he's utterly irrelevant and a joke. But as to your question, you know, the framers never envisioned a stunt pulled by a Speaker of the House like Nancy Pelosi holding on to articles of impeachment. 2 decades ago, it was sent over immediately. Within minutes, there was a vote to convey and transmit it. The Constitution is actually silent about that. It doesn't say that the Senate has to wait until it's transmitted. It's simply a Senate rule. Mitch McConnell shouldn't be subjecting himself to the extortion of Nancy Pelosi. He can, beginning in January, simply alter the rule or eliminate it entirely and set a date for an impeachment trial. Pelosi wants to deprive Trump of sort of a Sixth Amendment right. Yes, it's not a criminal trial, but the principle applies. Confronting your accusers, he's entitled to a trial.
Yeah.
He's entitled to an acquittal if that's what the supermajority majority would decide. You have to have a supermajority to remove him.
Well, in this, of course, Sarah, we've seen this before. It's in their nature to deny due process to someone they accuse. You think of Justice Kavanaugh, months and weeks of just trying to destroy that man's character and then just throwing him out, right? That was done. They've accomplished that. It looks like they want to accomplish the same thing here. Is that your sense? Some people think Pelosi is serious and she really wants fairness in the Senate, when she didn't, of course, afford that to the president. What's your take on her real agenda and what the impact will be ultimately on the Democrats?
Well, in my opinion, Tammy, the real agenda here is that Nancy Pelosi never wanted to do this to begin with. She knows it's political suicide, and the only thing she can do is actually hold on to these papers to not move the impeachment forward in the Senate. She's struggling. I mean, she was basically taken hostage by radicals in her own party. She tried to talk them out of it in the beginning. Then she believed Adam Schiff and believed that he had promised her They were going to have all this evidence in the House hearings that they were going to prove that the president is impeachable and that they were going to have all of this evidence. And they had no evidence. They had nothing at all. So what happened was, all of a sudden, we have a very partisan, straight down the middle impeachment in the House. Nancy Pelosi knows that if she takes it to the Senate, it's not going to be good for the Democrats. The only thing she can do right now is hold on to those articles of impeachment. And by the way, another point here, a lot of people are trying to make out on the Democrat side, and even Jennifer Rubin with the Washington Post, like she is some kind of genius for doing this. This was her only option. It's not like she thought about this before she went into it. She just has no other way out of this.
Well, in
fact, she's going to play her cards.
Yeah, in fact, perhaps this was the plan from the start, ultimately, because it has been a scheme, and they haven't cared about the impact on the country. But, Greg, there's also this presumption, it seems, from the Democrats that the Republicans will allow this to continue. Maybe they do think. We've seen the president's numbers go up. We've seen the opposition to impeachment go up as well. But isn't it proper, because if they don't, there's nothing in the Constitution that says they have to do this, as you've noted, and they could change the rule easily. Should we expect them to do that? Would it be better for them to do that, or would this charade continue to be exposed by letting it sit?
Well, the choice is twofold. Mitch McConnell can say, well, if you're not going to send him over, I don't care. We're not going to deal with it. Nancy Pelosi, though, could then use it as a cudgel to hit Trump over the head at every turn.
Add things to it.
Yeah, so the better choice is simply change the rule, hold a trial.
Do it.
And do it on your own terms. You know, the Constitution doesn't say the sole power to trial impeachments with the consent and advice of Nancy Pelosi. It doesn't say that.
And this, I think that that's the big deal, Sarah, is that, in fact, and this is, all of this is politics, we know this, and the Republicans are concerned about what's happening here, but we as the citizens are concerned about how the Constitution's being shredded at this point and made a mockery of. If the Republicans went ahead and they know what the articles of impeachment are, they've seen what the dynamic is, do you think that that would be, in the long run, you know, President Trump, of course, would be exonerated? Do you think that is the best way to go? Or do you think, again, there's the argument that America should see the Democrats for what they are?
Look, in my personal opinion, I think America has already seen the Democrats for what they are. The American people don't want to put up with this. We've seen the numbers turn in President Trump's favor. Of course, if Mitch McConnell makes that decision, if they make the decision to move with a fast and speedy trial and this impeachment charade, that's going to be their prerogative and their choice. But I think right now the Democrats are showing the public who they really are, and they will continue to show that. Tammy, they really have nowhere to go here. They don't have anybody in their party come 2020 that stands out as a figure that can even challenge President Trump right now, and they know it. And they know this, and this is driving them mad. So this is basically all they have. This is kind of like their hurrah, their advertisement, their way of raising funds. So I don't think if it goes either way this goes, it's not going to be good for them in the end. So I think it's a win-win for Republicans.
You know, the real tragedy is that the bar has now been set so low for impeachment by Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler. Any perceived offense is now impeachable, and it will extend in perpetuity more and more impeachments by Democrats unless Republicans vote Democrats out of office. They lose control of the House and Nancy Pelosi loses her job. Otherwise, we're going to see multiple impeachments down the road.
If there is not a dramatic response by the people, we're the final word. It will send, I think, a signal that all of this has been acceptable. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a difference in politics. We all can disagree. This has been a wanton disregard for the impact, not just on our system, but on the messaging it sends even to young people in the country, that that destroying the character of someone through a hoax or through lies, that due process means nothing, that equal justice means nothing, is, of course, ironically, why Trump was elected. He's taking these slings and arrows. And, of course, we've got a year coming up here where we can make a statement. But in the meantime, more damage can be done if we don't, in fact, and they're touching base at home now.
Right.
They're doing polls. And this is, I think, also
Americans need to rise up and say this is fundamentally wrong. We're not going to allow this to happen ad nauseum from here on out. And the only way to do it is with their vote.
Yeah, that's it.
And Americans will do that at the polls, Tammy. They will do that at the polls.
We will indeed. We've got a chance for that. Thank God for the founder. Sarah, Greg, thank you so much for that.
Next, Greg Jarrett interviews Tom Fitton with Judicial Watch. And he's advocating that the Senate should get aggressive and go on offense about conducting some of these investigations within their own committees. And my idea is a little different. And what I propose, and before we listen to this clip, is that the Senate should start up several of those committees and start calling in the Bidens, Lewandowski, all these different people that have, like, fact witness. They should subpoena Adam Schiff into this, or any of those other people on those number, that number, the telephone number scandal. They should conduct investigations within the Senate apart and separate from any impeachment process. And right now, right when they reconvene in January. And then I think that would pressure Pelosi to send over those articles. Then my advice to the Senate would be not to hold any investigation until these committee meetings, investigations, not concerning this impeachment, but concerning the scandals and so forth that are alleged against the president, are concluded, then conduct the trial at that time or dismiss it. Here we go now with this interview with Greg Jarrett and Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch.
Joining me now, Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch. Tom, good to see you. So now Nadler's Judiciary Committee is running to the D.C. Appellate Court saying, oh, gosh, we need Don McGahn's testimony because it might actually impact the current impeachment, although nowhere in the articles of impeachment is there anything related to McGahn or the Mueller investigation. What does that tell you?
It tells me that impeachment will be used against this president as long as the House is controlled by the coup cabal. And he should plan on this for not only this year, but if the Pelosi majority retains control of the House for his second term. And the question is there going to be any penalty for this wild abuse of power, this coup, which is now being directed at the Senate? And if I were the Senate, rather than put the president through an abusive trial, I would have some type of preliminary hearing, Greg, where the prosecutorial misconduct, the abuse of power, is at issue before a select committee of the Senate that investigates what Schiff did and investigates the other abuses of the coup cabal. So there's a report to the larger Senate, and they can decide whether they even let this trial get out of the gate. I don't think there should be a full-blown trial. Anyone goes on trial in the Senate, it should be Adam Schiff and his cohorts.
I agree. In fact, I've long argued there ought to be a motion to dismiss after what you would say would be a select committee, because the lack of evidence is conspicuous. I do want to ask you about two of the lawsuits you filed today, and here they are. One is against the CIA to obtain the fake whistleblowers' emails. Fake, I say, because under the whistleblower law, he doesn't qualify as a whistleblower. And as a consequence, he's not entitled to anonymity or, the protection of his name. The other one is against the Department of Justice to obtain communications from the FBI's former employees, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and their communications with the fake whistleblower. What do you hope to learn?
Well, technically speaking, we don't know this individual actually is the whistleblower. But we do know he worked in the Obama White House and then the Trump White House in a sensitive position for the CIA on Ukraine. So we want his emails because of the evidence that he is the whistleblower potentially. But secondly, he may have been involved in other illicit leaking, hence the emails, the email lawsuit for documents at the special counsel and the FBI, where there may have been skullduggery there. By this alleged whistleblower. And, by all accounts, he's a leaker. And, again, this is the sort of thing. Why is Judicial Watch having to do this basic investigative heavy lifting and lawsuits? The Senate should be talking about doing this work as well to figure out the connections here not only internally in the deep state attack on Trump, but their collusion with the Schiff gang.
He was an undercover informant spying on the president and feeding the information to the CIA and, of course, working in collusion with Adam Schiff. I want to switch over to the IG report because, of course, as you know, it identified a litany of inaccurate statements, false representations, concealing of evidence, errors and omissions, and outright lies. There are actually 51 of them in a chart in appendix number one. And so this has so inflamed many members of the Senate, Lindsey Graham among them, that he says he is going to call each and every individual who signed off on those FISA warrants, which would include James Comey, Andrew McCabe, and Rod Rosenstein. What's your reaction to that?
Well, that's the least he should be doing. Frankly, if justice was working smoothly, he wouldn't be able to do that because they all have to take the fifth. There needs to be criminal investigations, not only by the Justice Department, but the court can institute its own criminal contempt proceedings against those involved in this scandal. But it's way past due for Congress to investigate the FISAgate scandal. A lot of what we're hearing about from the IG, we've already known, thanks to Devin Nunes, Judicial Watch FOIA lawsuits. The IG is late to the game. It was a stalled report, and now finally the Senate has zero excuses. The court has zero excuses.
Right.
We'll see what the Justice Department
does.
Well,
we already know what people like James Comey are going to say in his awful interview in which he got shredded by my colleague Chris Wallace. He said, oh, gosh, you know, I'm way up here. I'm the director of the FBI, and you know, the people who were putting that together, those FISA warrant applications, those are seven levels below. And, of course, the Attorney General William Barr said that's nonsense. He scoffed at that notion. But you know that people like, you know, Comey and McCabe and probably Rosenstein are all going to say, gosh, you know, I didn't know. I was trusting other people. I mean, that's their excuse, isn't it?
Comey took that dossier after a meeting with Barack Obama. The next day, he took it to President-elect Trump to confront him with the dossier to get information and evidence. He ran downstairs. This is according to another IG report. He ran downstairs to his car, started typing out his memo, went back to the FBI field office, and called the Crossfire Hurricane team to give him his information about his spy op on the president-elect Trump. Comey was running the show, and he did it, frankly, at the orders of President Obama, because he told Obama and Biden at that Oval Office meeting what they planned. And according to Comey, Obama said good luck with that.
Yeah. And the amazing part is we learned from the IG report that Comey, that same month, January of 2017, found out from the subsource that it was all phony information. It was all just made up, exaggerated. Instead of running to the White House and saying, oh, sorry, Mr. President, you know, that dossier I told you about, you know, it's all fake. Instead of running to the FISA court and withdrawing the application to spy, Comey did the opposite and accelerated his investigation, sought more warrants to spy. It's really quite unbelievable. Let's hope John Durham gets to the bottom of it. Tom Fitton, good to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next is a short clip, and I'm not going to be able to play all of it, that Lou Dobbs had concerning this Senate Bill 386. That's something very important to look up, you know, and look up and get and drill down into, I should say, to find out. It's about the green cards and providing jobs that, you know, he said in there, in this interview, the lady said that Napoleon Tano, president of the University of California at Berkeley, has used this to replace all the iTech jobs out there with foreigners. Here we go now.
Senator Mike Lee, speaking of trying, is spending his time defending his proposed bill, Senate Bill 386. It is simply an assault on working Americans, the American middle class, and by the way, an insult against all Americans because it is duplicitous and deceitful. The Senate bill is known as the Fairness for High-Skilled Immigrants Act. He wrote in a statement Wednesday, quote, what it does do is end the discriminatory current policy that punishes green card applicants from large countries, read China and India. But that is exactly the problem. It would allow countries like India and China to push through as many H-1B visa workers as they like, who will then take U.S. jobs at lower pay for an indefinite period, by the way, because they get to automatically stay in the country while they wait for an employer-sponsored application for a green card. And in the 2020 election cycle, here's Senator Lee. He is, of course, a fan of foreign labor, but not so much American labor. He's raked in thousands from some of the top sponsors of H-1B visas, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Facebook, you know, the usual list. And joining us tonight is Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy at the Center for Immigration Studies. Jessica, good to have you with us. 386, where do you stand on that piece of legislation that is apparently to right great wrongs that have been done to foreign workers in this country?
Oh, it's a terrible piece of legislation, and it's very bad for American workers. The main reason it's so bad is because it rewards this business model for employers and these Indian body shops to replace American workers with foreign workers who come in on visas, and promising them green cards even though they're coming in on temporary work visas. It would put these visa workers at the head of the line to receive green cards even faster. And it means that
what is
employers...
The rush? I'm sorry, Jessica. What is the rationale? Why would you want to give 90% of the green cards to two countries, China, because that would be the effect.
Right,
China,
that would be the
India.
Result. Right, and because the per country caps meter the issuance of green cards, so no one country can monopolize them. Mm-hmm. But this legislation would say all of these contract workers from India who replaced American workers would go to the front of the line, and that means employers who want to hire talent from the rest of the world would have to get behind them in line. It doesn't solve the backlog problem, because there are something like 500,000 of these visa workers who feel that they are entitled to get green cards, even though they came on a temporary visa, and it rewards the employers most of all. I mean, follow the money. That's why the big tech employers are funding this effort, is because it allows them to perpetuate this system that has been so harmful for American workers and cost so many Americans their livelihood, and it's bad for the country to displace this entire sector of tech workers.
I want to ask you, how is it that Mike Lee should be so interested in this backlog? It's one of the most specious pieces of reasoning I've seen by even swamp standards, to suggest that equity is based on a backlog rather than on the nation's needs. And this will put back President Trump's meritocracy in immigration regulation and law for years, if not decades. It may
That's
kill
right.
it.
Yes. It's a step away from the merit-based system that we all know would be the best system for our country, because most of these workers who came on the H-1B visas are not particularly high-skilled. They're ordinary workers.
Well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. All these employers and the outsourcers, I don't care whether you're talking about Tata, you're talking about Cognizant, IBM, they tell you that these are the most skilled of all the immigrants in all the world, and we've got to have them.
It's nonsense. They're ordinary workers doing jobs that Americans once did, and they've been hired because they're cheaper. Right, exactly. It's all about the paying lower wages and not having to bother with Americans. When bypass right. U.S. workers, that's how they did it. Follow the money. Yeah. You know, as for Senator Lee, I can't speak to his motives, but he does have a lot of these high-tech companies in his district and a lot of workers there. And,
it's
Utah's been billed as fairness.
It's a hotbed of corporate labor arbitrage. I mean, it's preposterous. And where is his legislation for the American worker? We took a cursory research run at it.
Sorry to cut you off on that interview, but thank you for listening and good night.